Hey, Harry.
Hello, mate.
Who do you think will win the football later?
It's a tough one to call, but I would say one thing. Ignore all them TV pundits in their fancy suits. Sorry, son.
Listen, if you want a sure winner, put your money on... Sorry, I've got to run. Saunders back and I forgot to take the bins out.
Listen to Harry and make your best bet with BetVictor. 18 plus, please gamble responsibly.
Hello, a very good day. It's Monday and we are back with BetVictor for a little more eye on La Liga. Myself, Ollie Wilson and Jason Pettigrove walking through all of the news and views from another weekend of action in Spanish football's top flight. And I know that we seem to be preoccupied at the moment with the likes of Real Madrid, Barcelona, Atletico Madrid. But to be honest, they're the ones making the headlines right now in Spanish football. I think, Jason, you'll agree with me that there's one team that have certainly been hogging the headlines this weekend, not just for their result, but in the fallout as well. All the analysis coming out of Barcelona's miserable defeat on Saturday.
Am I allowed to swear?
I don't mind. I mean, as long as the higher-ups at BetVictor don't mind, I think we're probably okay. You go crazy. We can just tell its listeners to like earmuff it, you know, put your hands over your ears if you're offended by what Jason's about to say in 3, 2. It can't be more offensive than Bernardo Silva's tweet, let's put it that way. So I'm sure you're okay.
Well, no, we've got no bleep machine, so I'll keep it locked in for now. But my goodness me, where do you even start with that?
Well, I was kind of hoping that you would actually start with this in one case, because I know you sent me a message over the weekend just saying there's going to be a lot to talk about with Barcelona. Where should we look at? Should we start with the starting 11? A starting 11 that I'm going to name drop here, Jace.
Sure.
Was chatting with Danny Gabaldon over the weekend, and we were talking about the Barcelona result, and we both kind of said, "You look at that starting 11 that Barca put out, and there's not really aside from Griezmann." There's not really in names that you think, this is classic Barca type of players. You know, Suarez, of course, as well. But Ter Stegen, Semedo, Firpo, Piqué, who is a legend, but maybe not at his best, particularly at the start of this season. Lenglet, De Jong, Roberto, Rakitic, Perez, Griezmann, Suarez. There's not many sides in modern-day football that will be too fearful of that starting 11.
No, I guess not, but let's be honest. Valverde made a huge mistake by not starting Arturo in midfield. I don't know what Sergio Roberto has on him, but you know, clearly that was a game where Arturo should have started. I think that was the first big mistake.
Why does Arturo need to start that?
Because I just think the way he links with De Jong, particularly when we've seen him over the last couple of weeks, it's just, I don't know if I can use the phrase Barcelona-esque. He just fits into that dynamic so well. The way he moves, the way he plays the balls, the positions he takes up, the passes he makes. You know, Roberto's obviously been schooled at La Masia and Arturo hasn't, but I just think also in terms of form as well, Arturo has to go in there. Rakitic, I guess, you know, he's coming because they want to bench Busquets and rest him for a bit and also try and keep on Rakitic's good side. He's not started any of the games before now. Firpo, I feel a bit sorry for him. Obviously, he was going to come in because of Alba's injury, but he got caught cold. It was a real sort of rude awakening for him. And I think, you know, that opening minute really affected his confidence for the rest of the half. And I think the fact that he was sort of hauled off at half time and then had a right back play there, that sort of speaks volumes as to what might happen, I think, in the near future. The other thing that I sort of looked at and found quite odd, whenever Griezmann's been played in the position that he was in, that sort of out wide on the left, he's not really been able to affect things out there. It's not really his natural position. And it got me thinking, actually, that, you know, Coutinho had exactly the same problem. And, you know, we all spoke about what a flop Coutinho was, but maybe he wasn't the problem. And
I have to say, don't be lumping me in with this. Coutinho was a flop. I never actually thought Coutinho was a flop with Barcelona, because every time I saw him, he seemed to play as good or as well as everybody else around him, and at least you could always tell there was hard graft with Coutinho. I don't think you ever saw him not trying to produce.
But he was never the Liverpool Coutinho, which is kind of what Barcelona bought him for, was that sort of head down, attack, go forward, you know, really affect the play up front. And he never, I mean, he had the odd game, certainly when he started off, when he first came, he was very, very good. But then went off the boil and he never really recaptured that early form.
But that was also a Barcelona side that didn't play with that head down, gusto type movement. Like, it's a Barcelona side that were just stood around the final third, passing left to right, waiting for somebody to make a run. I think the difference is that, you know, Premier League football allows you to play a bit more like that because the game is slightly more stretched and slightly more open because it's a little more attacking one end to the other. Now, that's not the case with every game at all, and some teams do park the bus and try and make camp, but I think more teams do that against Barcelona because they've realised in the last few years that that's one of the best ways to slow down this club. So they can't play that attacking football with a lot of space. And instead, they've also kind of become a bit of a parody of themselves in the tiki-taka style of passing left to right, left to right, left to right, left to right, whereas old tiki-taka was penetrative. And now it just became a sense of possession, possession, possession. Messi gets us out of jail. Suarez gets us out of jail with one run, one finish. That was always why I thought Coutinho didn't work as well at Barcelona as he did at Liverpool, just because the game didn't allow him to play that and the position he was being played in. But anyway, we digress from the point. I apologise for interrupting you there, Jason.
Well, no. But I mean, it just strikes me as odd that you pay well in excess of 100 million in both cases, and then you shove them out wide and, you know, for all intents and purposes, from what I can see, you know, stay out wide. You know, Griezmann at his best is what I'd term like a floater almost. He'll sort of find the space, he'll move inside when he gets the opportunity, not being told to basically stay out there on the left the whole time. But the other issue for me, and it's becoming more of an issue, is Valverde just sitting on the touchline, sort of pensively crouched down, not really demonstrative in any way. And I do wonder if we had someone like a Diego Simeone type character, in the sense of someone that's prowling in their area, whether that sort of translates to the players. I'm wondering if Valverde's sort of, I don't know, I suppose just a quiet manner. There doesn't seem to be anything coming from the sidelines to really give the players
on the
pitch.
Fire.
Correct, yeah. No kick up the backside, and I think probably they needed it, and they certainly needed it at the weekend.
But does that come from being a manager at a club where there is a lot of player power as well in that dressing room? You know, that fire and intensity doesn't necessarily kind of come your way as a manager, because you then just look like a fiery, intense fool on the sideline when you don't really have as much control as, say, a Simeone at Atletico Madrid, for instance.
Luis Enrique had it, Pep Guardiola had it, and I'm not comparing the two sides per se, I'm just looking at, you know, purely from a managerial perspective.
But I certainly think things have changed. The style of football and the quality of player at that club is a far cry away from what Luis Enrique and Pep Guardiola had. And I think it's easier when you are considered kind of the architect and somebody being passed the architect's torch, if you will, to carry on that legacy. But now there's been such a big change in the squad. There's been more players that have been brought in. And I'm 100% sure that when you bring in a player, their attitude changes to you wanted me here, as opposed to when you're building up a player. You know, and I'm not saying every single player in that Barcelona side is deserving of having that arrogance on their shoulders anyway, because many of them have been brought in to be brought up and improved, such as Firpo, for instance, who's a solid fullback. But I think there's an idea that probably in a few years' time under Barcelona's tutelage that he could get a lot better after making his move from Betis this year, for instance. But I do think when you've got a team that is made up of transfers in rather than youth elements that have been brought up through a club, and particularly the core of the squad is a squad that is brought up through a club and almost looks at the badge like it's almost a religious artifact, you know, like you work for the badge for the club. there's a completely different attitude. And I think that's something that Valverde is having to deal with in that point, because it's all these players.
I wonder if that comes from above, because we've got the issue at the moment, haven't we, with Carlos Alenia. Exactly what you're talking about is someone that's been at La Masia from the beginning of his career, broke into the first team, is now finding it extremely hard to get any minutes. And that mirrors a lot of the young players that have come into the first team. I mean, Carlos Perez and Ansu Fati are two that, you know, we hope from a Barcelona perspective stay there and obviously extend their careers there. But were they to be knocked out of the side very shortly because everybody's fit, once Messi comes back into that front line, for example, you can have Griezmann, Suarez, Messi without any shadow of a doubt. These players need minutes. They can't possibly progress if they don't have minutes in the team. And that's the issue. Firpo as well. I know he's a transfer in, essentially, but now Alba, if he's fit, is always going to play there. And you can't expect any young players to progress if all they're being given is sort of cursory minutes here or there. One other point I just want to make while we're just on the subject of that game as well. Granada had 26% possession in the entire game, but yet had 4 shots on target. They were hungry. They fought for every ball. They used it intelligently. They were everything that Barcelona were not. And given that Barcelona are the reigning champions, that to me is the most damning indictment of their season so far.
Club in crisis. That's what a lot of the Spanish press are writing it as at the moment.
Define a crisis. I mean, they're 4 points behind top. So if that's a crisis, well, okay, it's a crisis. It's not at the moment. It will be if they lose another game or two in the next few weeks and they still don't claw their way back towards the top. Then it becomes very difficult.
Not a crisis in terms of attitude, in terms of, as you mentioned, you know, Valverde is running out of credit. Another paper's described it as this morning, and you would have to agree with it, to be honest. And defensively, again, they just continue to look utterly shoddy.
Yeah, there's no pace in defence. Unless Alba's there at wing-back, and obviously Semedo's got a bit of pace, but central defence, if they get anyone up against them that's got any sort of pace, they're done for. And Villarreal are next for them, and obviously we saw what happened last year, even though they came away with a 4-4 draw. So, I mean, again, it's all sort of waiting and see. I think they've got, you know, perhaps another half dozen games to see where they're at, and Valverde's got to turn it around. If he doesn't, I don't know if Barcelona board are brave enough to get rid of him mid-season, because the question then becomes who comes in. I can't think of anybody that's available that would want the job, and they would want to have the job to come in. So, you know, they made their bed in the summer. They said he was the man for them. He's going to be here for another season. It's their worst start for 25 years. So does that change their mind? We'll see.
That smells of crisis to me, Jason. That 0-0 draw in the Champions League last week as well against Borussia Dortmund didn't exactly help things too much, although a tough place to go, of course, to Germany. Let's talk about Real Madrid, because it's been quite the week. A huge loss in the Champions League, 3-0, away from home against Paris Saint-Germain. In firstly, and I don't want to get too kind of trivial on this, because we do like to talk about the important things on this show, Jace, but why on earth? I turned on the television to watch the Champions League game. I was 5 minutes late after my cab took a bit of time to get to work. And we didn't have any sound either, because I was watching it in the on the big screen in the kitchen in the office at the place in Buenos Aires where we're working at, just out of the city. And it gets turned on, and I'm like, great, sit in. And because we didn't have any close-ups for a few minutes, I was convinced that Madrid were playing in white. Now, obviously, that doesn't look great on me either. But that would seem like the logical thing. Team in dark blue and a team in white. And the team in dark blue, you would assume, would be Paris Saint-Germain. The team in white would be Real Madrid. Why on earth are they playing in their away kit and PSG are playing in their away kit for PSG's home leg of a Champions League group stage? I mean, I know it's like we've got to get this many games wearing the shirt to appease sponsors and get people to buy it. But just...
I think that's exactly it. I mean... The honest answer is I don't know, but I can imagine where we are at now in football in terms of not just one kit being changed a season, not just two kits, when they're having 3 kits every single season. Yeah. So they've got to make their money somehow. I think it's pretty disgusting. I hate all of this.
Don't you miss the away kit would change 1 year and a home kit would change the next year? There's no need to have a kit every single year. It was always nice when it was like every 2 years, because it meant you got 2 years out of wearing a shirt more than anything else as well, especially when I was a lot younger and I was like, I always wanted the new Sheffield Wednesday shirt. And it was probably great for my old man that he was like, okay, well, I can buy him this one. And then it's 2 years before he even thinks about piping up for another one. Ugh. The commercialisation of football, Jason. We could be here all day with, I'm sure.
I mean, I didn't like to see it, but unfortunately, that's just the way football's going, isn't it? It's just one, well, I don't even want to dwell on it.
The only thing more farcical than that was probably Real Madrid's performance against Paris Saint-Germain, because they weren't great in any way, shape or form. They had limited spells of quality, and Gareth Bale had a goal ruled out for handball, which continues to bamboozle people. I will say that it's actually a goal that probably would have been ruled out for handball had we not got VAR anyway. Whether the referees picked it up on the pitch or not is a slightly different matter, but it probably was the right decision that Bale's wonderful finish was ruled out. Di Maria coming back against his former side to strike two goals. Courtois should have saved the first one as well in at the near post. And Meunier with the final one in the 90th minute just to wrap up a 3-0 victory for Paris Saint-Germain. But it was looking like a pretty bad week at that point for Real Madrid. And there was a very interesting moment. And this is why I bring up this game, because I don't normally like harking back that long ago on this podcast. But before kickoff, they're lining up for the customary team photo and holding the pendant that's got the club badge on it and everything. And I can't remember who it was now, but somebody passed that pendant to Gareth Bale. And Bale's kind of slightly crouched down, waiting for the photo. And he looks at it. And oh my goodness, I've never seen such a look of disgust on a player's face of, really? Like, you're going to ask me after everything to stand and be the man that holds this for the team photo in the big Champions League game? Are you effing kidding me?
And does it really matter in the grand scheme of things?
It obviously does to Gareth Bale. There's obviously a huge chip still on the shoulder of how Real Madrid treated him this summer, and rightfully so, especially as he's played really well this season so far, and kind of that's been a bit of a middle finger up to Zidane and his cronies at Real Madrid this season. But I liked that. I also loved Eden Hazard looking down, seeing Bale's reaction and like giving off the wry little smile of, oh, I know what you're thinking, this is pretty funny. And then Bale passes it on to, again, I can't remember who he laid it off to now for the team photo. I think it was Danny Carvajal. And kind of gives it to, yeah, it was Danny Carvajal actually, because he gives it to him as in, well, you're the elder respected Spaniard, so you should be holding it and not myself. And Hazard in the meantime is just kind of wetting himself inside, I think, with laughter at this whole situation. But it does show that everything isn't all smooth. Even though Bale's playing well and putting in a shift and putting in real hard graft, he's not happy at that club in any way, shape or form. And if I was Real Madrid, I'd keep annoying him, because it's the best football we've seen out of Gareth Bale in some time, and if he's staying healthy, keep annoying him. Seems to get the best out of him.
He's been brilliant, hasn't he? And not just him as well. I mean, Hazard came in against Sevilla from the start, was fantastic. I know he didn't score, but we saw lots of good work from him. Benzema, I thought, was absolutely brilliant again. There's not enough said about how good Benzema is as a front man, not just in inverted commas, a centre forward, as a striker. He does absolutely everything. He deserved his goal. I think that's now 20 goals he's got in the league in 2019, and only Messi and Mbappe and Lewandowski have scored more. His movement and application, absolutely superb. And saying about the result as well, I think that's only Real Madrid's second win in seven at the Ramon Sanchez Pizjuan. So Zidane will be delighted. I think it's the best performance, team performance, that Real Madrid have had since he's been back there. And it's come absolutely at the right time. It's obviously put them up into second place, just on goal difference from Athletic Club at the top. I think was it 1-3, drawn 2, haven't lost yet. Things are just starting to come together. I'd like to say something about Mendy as well at left back, as sort of Reguilon did last season. Much better option defensively for Real Madrid. Even though I expect Zidane will give Marcelo the shirt once he's fit again, I don't think that'd be the right decision, but we shall see. I mean, no one expected that result. Like you said, after that game in midweek, they had no shots on target for the first time in over a decade. They were absolutely abysmal. And yet they turned it around against a Sevilla side that up until this weekend were flying, looked very, very good. odds on, in my opinion, to have won that game. And they never really got going. Lopetegui would be very, very disappointed with that. Too many players static. De Jong, particularly, as their striker, did absolutely nothing. If he'd have gambled on a couple of occasions, he would have got a goal, but he just stood there. Ocampos was far too casual for them. And just, you know, everything we expected from Sevilla, we didn't see. And it was a great, great win for Real Madrid.
Do you like the idea of Zidane barely changing that side as well from the one that lost in the Champions League, brought in, of course, Sergio Ramos, who was suspended for the Champions League game? But it's Zidane asking his team to kind of hold themselves to account with their performances on the pitch, rather than saying, oh, you were terrible in midweek, let's change it.
Yeah, I think my beef with the whole thing around Madrid is that we were led to believe that they were going to have this revolution, as they called it. And if they'd have said at the very beginning, you know, Zidane's going to come back and they're going to stick with the same players that they had. I mean, it doesn't bother me, but it seemed to me it was just an easy option for Zidane. We've often questioned tactically how good he is. And we do wonder if he has actually got what it takes. Now there's no Cristiano Ronaldo there to lift a team of not necessarily inexperienced players, but youngsters, youth, that, you know, the sort of players that Florentino Perez was saying he was going to pep his squad with. And to then go back to sort of revert back to his old boys, if you want to call them that, to me, it's almost like a retrograde step. If they want to be this team that are young, bright, hungry players, a bit like Barcelona, somewhere you've got to draw a line in the sand to say, right, OK, we might be trophyless for a year, 18 months, but actually what we've got here is the core of a very good young side, and this is how we're going to progress forward. You know, they've got players that are out and about in, you know, other clubs. Martin Odegaard at Real Sociedad's a perfect example. That were they to be brought back, they have got the makings of a very decent young squad there. It just seems that Zidane prefers to use the people that have won him trophies before, and I think he may well in the future come unstuck.
Interesting to see that suddenly, after we did it, the Spanish press did it, saying Real Madrid are going to have a pretty poor year this year. It's suddenly Real Madrid gets serious with win at Sevilla and Real Madrid showing their class away from home. And it's just the rhetoric changes so quickly. I absolutely love it. But Real Madrid are fighting quite fit at the start of this La Liga season. As you say, level on points with Athletic Club, still just absolutely amazing. The worst defence in La Liga right now is third from bottom Espanyol and eighth place Barcelona. Unbelievable. Although they are the best scorers in the league as well. So, you know, Barca, that is. Not Espanyol. Espanyol. Certainly struggling for goals, Espanyol, with just their three so far this season. Quick rundown of the table as it stands after five games, because we have midweek fixtures coming up. Athletic Club lead the top of the table by goal difference alone on 11 points, along with Real Madrid, who are second. Granada up there in third after a fine start to their campaign on 10 points, along with Real Sociedad, Sevilla and Atletico Madrid. Then outside of the European spots, Villarreal are 2 points off Atleti with 8 in seventh spot. Behind them is Barcelona, Levante, Osasuna, Getafe, Valencia, who continue to be slightly shaky at the start of this campaign, Deportivo Alaves, Real Betis, Real Valladolid, Celta de Vigo, Mallorca, and then the bottom three, Espanyol, Eibar, and Leganes. And it's top versus bottom, top going to bottom on Wednesday. Athletic Club will be odds on favourites to get a victory over Leganes. In fact, they are 17-10 to get the away victory on betvictor.com. Leganes 19-10 to get the victory, and the draw is 19-10 as well. Barcelona against Villarreal on Tuesday. The Yellow Submarine can sometimes be a very difficult customer for some of the bigger sides in Spain. Jason, Barcelona 2-7 on home soil, though, to get the victory. Villarreal 1-8 to win away on the road on Bet Victor. Not a bad shout, actually, for putting something on Villarreal at this moment. Lionel Messi, first goal scorer, is 5-2. Luis Suarez 3-1. Of course, he's having problems now after insulting a linesman on the weekend as well. If it's not one thing, it's the other. And generally, the other is Luis Suarez. I mean, yeah, don't need to touch on him and his general antics. Demeanor. General demeanor and reputation, I was going to say. Elsewhere, Real Madrid take on Osasuna. Karim Benzema 3-1, the first goal scorer on BetVictor. Of course, you can have a look at Eden Hazard, who is 7-2. Gareth Bale 4-1, certainly worth a punt on that. That's the Real Madrid game in the Spanish football coming up. Some of the main highlights from the weekend. Real Madrid 2-9 on home soil to beat Osasuna on Wednesday. Osasuna 21-2. Very long odds indeed of their chance to get a victory on the road. Anything that's really standing out for you, Jace, this week? I mean, it's obviously a big week for Barcelona just to salvage some of their reputation. But aside from that, there's not many of these games that I look at and I'm thinking, whoa, juicy. So can you tease anything for me to get my heart pumping? Mallorca against Atletico Madrid might be quite nice, because it's nice having Real Mallorca back. I'm sure Jerry Armstrong is very happy to see that as well. And
I'm sure he is.
and Atleti, there's a few frustrations about a couple of players. Diego Costa's been getting a bit of abuse this week for lack of goals in his performances. So he could probably do with bagging a couple against a poor Mallorca side who are fourth from bottom. But is there anything that I should really be looking at this week and think, yeah, I'm going to get my teeth into that before, of course, the big Sudamericana games coming up in South America this week?
I know the one fixture that stands out for me, actually, is Valencia against Getafe. I think for two reasons. Getafe, I've got Barcelona in the game afterwards, and that could be a very interesting match. But just they're both locked together, 11th and 12th in the league. There's only a point that separates them. I think it's a good test for Valencia to see actually how this season really is going to pan out, because at the moment, as you said earlier, they're really sort of stuttering, and we'd expect them to sort of start climbing fairly soon. Getafe have obviously got their European campaign this season, which in the longer term may affect them. But they've both got very, very good players. They're both good to watch. And I think for a mid-table game, I think it's probably going to have everything. It's going to have a bit of passion. It's certainly going to have hungry players, because, you know, 3 points from a game, potentially, they're going to get up to sort of the top seven. Let's wait and see. There's not really any other games that stand out for me, even the Barcelona Villarreal one. I'm not excited about that at all. I think it should be an easy home win. Villarreal, when they go to the Camp Nou, aren't great. Barcelona have been fantastic at home this season. 5 goals against Betis. We'll see. But I can't get excited about that at the moment. I really can't.
Wow, that sums up Barcelona fans everywhere, doesn't it? Jaime Mata for Valencia, 5-1 to be the first goal scorer. Kevin Gamero, 9-2. Maximiliano Gomez, 9-2 as well in that game. Against Getafe, Valencia, 17-20 to get the home win against Getafe. On Wednesday night, Getafe 17-5 for the away win. All of those odds brought to you by BetVictor. Please gamble aware. You must be 18 or over. For more information on gambling aware, visit begambleaware.org. And of course, odds are subject to change. Well, that about wraps it up here for Ireland Liga this week. Jace, thanks as always. I'm sorry that it's been a podcast kind of bemoaning Barcelona for most of it. So hopefully there's better news when we return in about a week's time or so.
We shall see. Keep well. I'll speak to you in a week.
Yeah, I'll be back in Blighty by the time we record next time. But until then, big thanks to BetVictor for joining us. You can follow them on Twitter at BetVictor. Jason, you can find Jason on Twitter at Jason Pettigrove, not at Jason Pettiford, as I've said on numerous occasions, not just on this show, but in the past and even to his face at times. And of course, O_J_Wilson is myself. Until the next time that we talk. There's midweek games and there's weekend games, and it's all coming up in Eye on La Liga next week.